Welcome to the Futile Podcast. This is Ian, and we got Mark. And tonight we're going to talk about the 1978 film with Clint Eastwood, Jeffrey Lewis, Beverly D'Angelo, Sandra Locke, Any Which Way But Loose,
and Mill Tillis.
Forgot to mention Clyde.
And Charlie Rich.
Clyde steals the show, of course. This is the Clint Eastwood truck driving, arm breaking, arm wrestling, bare knuckle boxing, orangutan hanging out with them road trip movie, and that you've all heard of, and that some of you may have seen, some of you may have not seen. I don't know what to say. It's in between Callahan 3 and 4, which had we already determined had the biggest, most important gap in which both of us were born. It was between 76 and 84, right?
Yep.
Which is a major gap between Callahan films. He's still looking pretty young in this. And then by Callahan 4, he's definitely aged up. And he's really built in this movie.
Yeah, he definitely had some biceps going on.
Yeah, he bulked it up. I don't know what you do for that. If you just lift free weights, like 60-pound free weights, or what you do.
He was doing the weights in Callahan 5. And he was doing the running in Callahan 4.
And 5. He was doing running in 5, yeah.
And 5.
So it seemed that was an important part of his... Well, and then he did that movie where he was the Marine drill sergeant with Mario Van Peebles in the 80s, too.
Oh, Heartbreak Ridge?
Yeah, Heartbreak Ridge. And he did that one where he was like the spy with the plane. Was that in the 80s or was that in the late 70s?
Was that Firefox?
Yeah. So, and then, oh, what's that one where he works for the guy that's like the albino? I don't know if he's like a spy in that one or what. Is that Firefox?
That was the one with the jet.
Yeah, that was one with the jet, but you know what I'm talking about? Have you seen the one I'm talking about? I saw part of it years ago on TV when I was a kid. And the whole thing is that, like, the guy that he works for, or the guy that's, like, the boss of this, like, clandestine organization or something.
Like the Phoenix Project?
Yeah, he's like an albino guy that needs, like, constant blood transfusions. So he meets him in this really dark room with, like, a red light on. It's really creepy.
Didn't see that one.
Yeah, gosh. Anyway... I definitely do want to further explore the greater reaches of the Clint Eastwood dumb, as I would call it, because they're fabulous movies. I mean, as a protagonist, you really just can't beat him. This film is a strange one because he really is not playing a particularly likable character. He's kind of just a dumb boxer guy, you know, that kind of thinks with his fists before doing anything else. And a couple times, he kind of riles people up because he's just not paying attention or whatever. And then rather than just kind of apologizing or anything, he just kind of goes straight to beating him up. Which, I mean, is fine. I think people that cite, like, the Jody Hill comedies, like the Observing Reports and things like that, as being sort of a more challenging kind of comedy, this film is kind of in that same vein where the character is not really... a good guy. He's not as effusively, like, deluded and screwed up, which I think is actually probably makes him slightly more interesting than just this total joke, like, completely unrealistic character, like you get in the Jody Hill, you know, like you get in Observe and Report. But to me, it seems like it's a similar kind of comedy where the humor comes from people that are really not... There's no real good people in it. There's just people that are dumb and violent and stupid. And that's really just what reality is. Just dumb, violent, stupid people kind of bouncing off each other. And in the end, it's got kind of that sort of ho-hum, so it goes. Which I think is also a little more funny and also a little more... I don't know, it seems a little more real than, like the Observe and Report, everything's actually okay in the end. I find that very uninteresting and unchallenging, you know, because it just kind of, like, hand waves and says, oh, look, everything turned out okay. I mean, it followed the generic formula in that sense. And this one is, it doesn't. I have problems with it because it's too long, first off. The first act is slow. I mean, it's ostensibly, it's a road picture. Clint Eastwood and his buddy, his brother, played by Jeffrey Lewis, go looking for this
Juliet Lewis's daddy.
Go looking for this woman that Clint Eastwood's kind of sweet on that he met at the Palomino, and
Halsey Taylor. He'd been her white set.
He had been buying her nice, bought her a nice outfit for hee-haw and everything, and then she all of a sudden disappears, and he thinks it's her crazy boyfriend
that's Skyler
taken her away and, you know, abducted with her, absconded. So he goes off looking for her, trying to be noble, you know, the noble knight, the chivalrous man, to a degree, I guess. But he's a little deluded too. He doesn't really catch on that she's really just bailing on him. She's not interested. She got what she wanted.
He was hustled.
Indeed, he was hustled. And eventually the audience catches. I have to wonder if it's the sort of film that it seems like it shows its hand to the audience sooner than it does to Eastwood. You know, like, you know that he's kind of walking into it way before he finally realizes that it's, before, like, he gets stood up the second time or anything. I realized that...
Well, really, unless you're just going for the one-night stand, as soon as a lady tells you that she's got a man and, you know, he can come around when the man's gone, that's usually a bad sign.
Definitely. But Eastwood doesn't care about that, which is what makes him gives him kind of a despicable edge, if you will, you know?
He doesn't know how despicable that is.
Well, but it's not respectable. It's not, you know...
It's not very smart. If
yeah.
she was married, I would say that'd be a different thing, because then you're breaking up a marriage.
That's true.
But...
I don't know, but who are you to judge a relationship? I mean, you know, it's just, you got to put yourself in the other guy's shoes, you know? You at least hope that the woman would do right and say, hey, you know, take a walk, buddy.
Well, really, you figure if a woman's going to cheat on her boyfriend, she's going to cheat on you.
Yeah, bitches ain't shit, right?
Not that one.
Not that one, which was great because she was like his golden girl, right? She had to be in almost everything he was in for a while there. Because they were married. And so it's an interesting... kind of character for them.
They must have been in 5 films, maybe more.
I wonder if this was one of the first.
No, the first was Outlaw Josie Wales.
Oh, okay.
And then there was The Gauntlet, and there was Every Which Way But Loose, and probably the sequel, which I haven't seen.
Yeah.
Then there
I'd
was
be interested to see the
Mick
sequel.
In yeah. Callahan 4.
Callahan 4.
And I feel like there's one other I'm missing.
After Callahan 4? Mid-80s?
Maybe not. That's 5.
Okay, whatever. Who cares? But, yeah, there is a sequel to this film, which I'm now more interested to see just because of the way this one ends. I mean, this one is curving off a few other things. It's a road picture, like the Blues Brothers, and it's got Nazis that are just, like, for comedic relief, just like the Blues Brothers, which I believe came out in 77.
Oh, Blues Brothers came out in 80.
Oh, in 80. Oh, so maybe... Oh, then there you go. They beat the Blues Brothers to the Illinois Nazi angle. Though they're not Illinois Nazis. They're L.A. Nazis. L.A. biker Nazis. Which is never bothers anybody. Like, it never comes up. They walk into the diners and stuff. And they got their... You know, they got the swastikas. And the one guy's got the, like, hat and everything. It was like an SS hat?
No, that wasn't an SS hat.
It was just like a German soldier hat, then, I guess, huh?
Well, I did notice he was wearing Luftwaffe.
Okay. So some of that stuff. It kind of just a hodgepodge.
But that was really, for whatever reason, that came up a lot in the 60s and 70s. Bikers wearing German surplus. I have absolutely no idea why. It never made a lot of sense to me.
Maybe their dads got it all when they were fighting in the war, and they kind of... took it as like a weird kind of trophy of an enemy kind of thing.
Could be.
I mean, in the 60s, it seems like anyone that fought in WW2 would be in their late 30s or early, too old to be in a biker gang. You know? Possibly. Because you got to assume that they were, what, maybe 18, 19, fighting in the war? If they were doing it right, you know? I mean, they might be 16 too, but still... That's in 45.
We'll say they're...
Add 20 to whatever age you're giving them, and you make them 36 if they're a youngest.
Well, yeah.
So there's some weird sociology going on there, which, speaking of sociology, we got our little interaction with a sociologist.
USC.
From USC, which is another thing. I mean, just that first act is too long, and it, before it turns into what it is, which is a road picture. And that's like, it's too hodgepodgey or something at that beginning.
There's, and you got a pursuit going on, multiple pursuits.
You got to have that in a road picture. There's always a pursuit. I can't think of any road picture that doesn't have pursuit. There's the cops and the Illinois Nazis and Blues Brothers. There's, is there more than one group? There's a couple different groups in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. That's a road picture.
Yeah.
Let's see. The Sure Thing. Does The Sure Thing have anyone pursuing him?
No.
Doesn't. That's weird. That's what's missing from that movie, I think, then. Because I like most road picture movies, and I like most of those 80s John Cusack movies, but that one is in my lower... I don't like that one as much as, like, I like, say, Better Off Dead or Hot Pursuit or, you know...
Even with the introduction of Miss Desperately Seeking?
Daphne Zuniga?
No. The chick from The Desperate Housewives. Wisteria Lane or whatever the hell they are.
Wisteria Lane. Get it right. Come on. We're talking about high-end satire here.
What's the chick? Nicole Sheridan.
Nicolette Sheridan. Yeah, well.
She was introduced in that movie. She was the Sure Thing.
Good point. Anyway, we're getting way off topic talking about road pictures here. Let's focus back on Any Which Way But Loose. It was completely different than what I thought it was, which I thought it was like... I mean, it's a redneck movie.
Yes.
So that's what I was expecting. But I thought the whole angle with the orangutan was going to be way more played up, like that he ends up getting the orangutan. Like, I thought it was going to be like a Turner and Hooch kind of thing, where like he begrudgingly has to take on, like... adopt this animal and like first doesn't want to deal with it and everything. Yeah, but it's nothing like that. Instead, it's just like he's already developed a relationship. He's very, very kind of friendly with him, and they're buddies. And I actually like that better because I didn't want to see the generic formula of him like not wanting to deal
with
it.
This is before the generic formula.
Yeah, I guess. But in that sense, yeah, I think I liked it a little better for that.
The formula came about just kind of a play on the buddy cop.
Mm-hmm.
And they just had to take it to a new level.
No, but they've done that with other things, you know. It just seems that there's been other animal people movies of different degrees. Flipper. Well, there was that one with Bill Murray and the elephant. I never saw it, but I don't know how that formula broke down. Then there was...
Operation Dumbo Drop.
Operation Dumbo Drop, where there was...
with Ray Liotta.
Mm-hmm. There was... what else? There was the one with the bit with Charles Grodin.
Beethoven,
yeah, you know.
There was A Fish Called Wanda.
Well, I mean, that the fish in The Fish Called Wanda was pretty minuscule, and then Kevin Klein...
There were the dogs.
Ate it. Yeah.
They kept eating it. That was sad.
That was sad. That bothered me as a child. But no, I mean... I like that part.
Man, I had a little lady like that run out in front of me the other day when I was driving in Eureka, and she's flipping out at me. Because she's just, like, blindly walking around with her three little yipper dogs.
Oh, my God.
And then she starts screaming at me, and I'm looking that I'm driving too fast or something. I look down, I'm driving the fucking speed limit.
Yeah, well, whatever.
And she had to be walking out on the street that I needed to turn on, so I had to go down a couple blocks. It was just, it could have been. Could have been pretty.
You got to avoid some of those certain streets like that. But yeah, I mean, this movie, I don't know, it's those kind of movies that they would make in that sort of late 70s, early 80s period when the economy was shit and, like, there was just a lot of brawling. People were just in a bad mood.
A lot
mood.
Of beer drinking, a lot of brawling.
Beer drinking and brawling. And we kept track. We tried.
Peanuts, the whole Jimmy Carter connection.
We tried to, We tried to figure out if there was any sort of symbology going on with the beer, but it seemed like, I mean, because Eastwood and the good guys were drinking, they drank Ole Gold when they were drinking and driving.
Dos Equis.
And then they drank Dos Equis once they got into, like, the Southwest.
Yep.
The cops drank...
Coors. No.
They did at the end.
They were drinking Coors at the end?
When they were in the tow truck. Or not in the tow truck, but getting towed, because their car got pushed in.
Like their shit.
Not like their, maybe that's what happens to Eastwood in the sequel. when all of its comeuppance happen.
And then, of course, law enforcement's portrayed in a negative light.
Law enforcement's portrayed in a comedic light, I would say. I would say that they're also not really portrayed as law enforcement proper, necessarily. Only that one time when they're in uniform, when they go to Ma.
Because he's on his medical leave.
Yeah, the rest of the time they're on their leave, and they're just like two guys that are just apparently have nothing better to do. And I don't know, it almost bit off more than it could chew, because it has those guys, and then it has, and things just kind of happen, and things are resolved, but they're, I guess, resolved in a very simplistic way, you know, resolved with his fists.
I was disappointed because this movie had so many opportunities for Beverly D'Angelo to take her shirt off, and she didn't.
That's a good point.
I mean, you could have put Clyde in there so many different ways.
Yeah.
Walking in on, was it a banana? I think it was. I think Chevy Chase walked in with a banana in Vacation with the whole psycho.
Yep, you could have done that.
Clyde could have done that. We could have done that. Clyde could have just, you know, inadvertently ripped her shirt off, you know, for laughs.
That would have been funny. No, so I
was disappointed.
I did like that angle though of the sort of dumbfounded, sort of bug-eyed, dopey brother. He just picks up Beverly D'Angelo on the side of the road, pretty much selling. She's working at a fruit stand, and she goes along with him, and she's cool, and she's game to be hanging out with him. Meanwhile, poor old Clint.
Clint's working on the fruit stand.
Poor old Clint had been kind of slow playing this one dame, and it turns out that she's shit.
He did have the slow hand.
I know, and so it's kind of I don't know. It was kind of a difference there, you know. It's definitely not a love story, but I don't know. It had
a happy ending of sorts.
Ma gets her driver's license, and then they kind of drive home. It seemed like it was all just a really big waste of time.
I think she should, you know, do you ever see that movie Surf Nazis Must Die?
No.
I think she should head down, like, get the shotgun, get in the tow truck, and just start hunting down the bikers.
The remaining few bikers that used their German industriousness to manage to salvage what they had left of their bikes by the end.
Yeah, poor old Black Widows.
Oh, boy. R.I.P. Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say that this is a good movie. I want to like it because I like the road trip factor, but it's honestly like 45 minutes before the movie really gets moving, and they could have cut 20 minutes out in the beginning, and it would have gotten on a little quicker, and I think I would have liked it a little more.
It's definitely a lazy Saturday afternoon kind of movie.
Definitely, you know. And
TNT at its finest. So, plenty more Callahan coming at you.
Yeah, in different forms. It's all chasing that desire for more Callahan movies, which we're never going to get. And I mean, the gauntlet's
at least somewhat close.
It's close. And then
what would have happened had Callahan become a drunk.
The Rookie is what would have happened if Callahan joined up with Charles Sheen. Are you kidding me, Raul Julia? The Rookie.
I didn't realize he was in that.
No, we got to do The Rookie for sure. Pink Cadillacs would have been if Callahan had given up to go.
I forgot all about Pink Cadillac. Wasn't that with White Supremacist too?
Possibly. Bernadette
Didn't
Peters.
They had the compound.
And that's
or
the
something.
One. That's the one with if Callahan had given up on being a cop to be a bounty hunter. So we can make it work. And then I gotta find that clandestine
really
one with the albino.
He didn't make a whole lot of memorable movies in the '80s, did he?
Well, that's what's kind of cool because they're not memorable. It's not like you're tired of them. You can find them and then, you know, watch them if you want. You don't have to, but I just think as a protagonist, I just love that character. I mean, it's almost always the same character, but I like it. Like I like its behavior. I like the humor and the sensibility and everything. Even in this, he's really not that likable of a character, but he's good to his orangutan and he's good to his friends. And
Orville.
And you know what? Even at the end, he's good to Tank, you know?
He's not good to Tank.
He feels bad.
He doesn't want to become the next Tank Murdoch.
Maybe, but it seems like he's kind of being like, I think he has some pity on him. That's why he takes the dot. You know, because it wouldn't make him the next Tank. I get you.
Yeah, because then everybody's going to be after him.
Everybody's after him.
And there's always going to be somebody who's better, and he's getting long in the tooth.
Yeah. And, he's done. That's a good point.
Because he's an unknown now.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
He becomes the next Tank Murdock, and
then he has to drink some of the juice and some of the juice. Aces over nines.
Aces over nines.
All that stuff has to happen. Anyway, yeah, they don't make them like they used to, and this one's a good old... I don't know what a movie like this would be like nowadays, with all the PC-ness and everything else. Not that it's particularly un-PC. I mean, the whole Nazi angle is weird, but just the brawling and the redneckery of it all. I don't know. It's just like a sad nostalgia, I guess. You're just looking for more good movies from the 80s and stuff.
There's a lot 70s. Out there.
There definitely are, yeah. We got a lot to do.
We haven't done Critters yet.
No, there's the whole Critters pantheon, pretty much.
And the Ghoulies?
Maybe the Ghoulies. I don't know.
The Wishmaster?
Oh, God. Boy, I don't know about Wishmaster. I kind of did Wishmaster with my college friends already, Mark, you know?
Yeah, okay.
So I don't know what to say about that. I mean, we basically sat down and... The best part was the trying to figure out how much of a locker room lawyer Wishmaster was being about things. Because honestly, we would all be like, okay, the guy didn't say turn me into a glass block and then shatter me. He said, I'd like to see you try. And then he's like, as you wish. And it's like, he didn't even say, I wish you would try. Gosh, Wishmaster just got so lazy at certain points that it was really... He would just get lazy. And then,
now, my favorite's always been the chick that wanted to lose weight.
Oh, yeah, that's good. From three? Three's when they shit-canned the original actor that played Wishmaster, though. He was so great in
and
two.
Don't they get the bread or something?
Bread?
Brit?
Yeah, Brit? Yeah, they do. They do, because he's supposed to be a professor. And it's like, what are you talking about? Wishmaster's not about Brits.
And he's breaking hearts to boot.
He is, and he's breaking hearts left and right. But then his own heart. That's the best part about... Is that in four? Do you remember? Have you seen all of them?
No, I haven't.
I think four is the one, and this is the one Daniel loved the most as a philosophy major, because it brought up the best question ever. She needs to, basically with Wishmaster, you know that like when you awaken the djinn or whatever, rub the magic jewel, you make your three wishes, and then he can take over the world, and evil and darkness unfolds on everything. So this chick that did it, like ends up like making two wishes. On superfluous crap, it's always that way. And then she's about to make her third, and her third is that she wishes that she could love the guy who's in the human form of Wishmaster. Because it's kind of like her husband gets crippled and then dies or something. It's something really twisted and weird. And then the Wishmaster's like middle management above him kind of comes in. He's like, look, she's made the third wish. You got to do this. And he's like, no, I can't grant that wish. It's a wish that only she can fulfill, you know? Because she wished that she could love him. So then he basically becomes him trying to get her to fall in love with him. So the wish will be fulfilled. It's great. And then it has like a sword fight in the middle of like a park. Oh, and you can see in the background there's like kids playing frisbee. Oh, yes.
Well, you got the Wishmaster, you got the Pumpkinheads, you got the Leprechauns.
Well, Seth and I did a Pumpkinhead, like Pumpkinhead 3 Ash of Dashes with Lance. They brought Lance back for that one. And I was like,
was his son? Did his son come back to life?
No,
yet?
No. The first Pumpkin movie is pretty fucked up and kind of sad, actually.
It is. You do feel for the guy, and it's not badly acted. And I still—that's one of the creepiest moments on film, in my opinion. Is the freaking witch.
Oh yeah,
she was scary.